And you're sure of that?
He nodded. The questions went on and on. They spoke around me like I wasn't there. I couldn't keep up with the plot or process the information correctly. The sound of Cole's skull as it cracked against the side of the porcelain tub interrupted everything they said, everything that was going on around me. It forced its way in unbidden. He was never supposed to get hurt.
Case number 5243. Interview, Piper Goldstein.
Is it common for parents to act the way Hannah did in the hospital? Luke asked.
Yes.
So you'd seen it before? He and Ron exchanged another glance like they'd been doing all afternoon.
I have.
Previous cases flashed through my mind in snippets. The teenage mother who'd given birth in the locker room after hiding her pregnancy from everyone and hadn't spoken for 2 weeks afterward. The 9-year-old boy who'd gone into catatonic depression after being removed from his mother's care. And the Vaughn baby. Sometimes the brain shuts down after trauma for a while. That's what everyone believed was going on with Hannah, some kind of traumatic shock. We had no reason not to. But not Holly. She filed a child in need of protective services order given the nature of Cole's injuries. He tapped his pen on the table. I understood Holly's concerns, even if I hadn't agreed with her filing the report, because I'd seen the type of injuries Cole had had before. They were rare in babies who hadn't been shaken, but just because it was unlikely didn't mean it was impossible, and he was missing all the other signs. Nothing else pointed toward abuse. He didn't have any of the rib fractures, seizures, or bruises that you typically saw. But mostly, I knew it wasn't abuse because it was the Bowers. There was no way Hannah had hurt Cole, not even a chance.
Take me through what happened after the child in need of protective services order was filed.
Because of the child in need of protective services order, Janie had to be removed from her home during the preliminary investigation. Cole would have been removed too, but since he was in the hospital, it was basically the same thing. It's standard practice when there's been more than one report made on the parents.
How long does it take to complete the investigation?
It usually only takes a few days to determine whether there's probable cause for child abuse. They automatically remove children from their home until they can determine they're safe from any harm. I looked at Luke because he was the one I'd spoken to about it earlier.
I told you before that we always try to place kids with relatives first rather than in foster care, and Janie's case wasn't any different. It made the most sense for her to stay with Allison.
Did she go home from the hospital with Allison? Ron asked.
Yes.
Allison agreed to take her?
She did.
And you felt comfortable with that? You didn't have any concerns?
None.
50. Christopher Bauer. The neurosurgeon and pediatrician walked into the room together, still wearing their green scrubs from surgery. Their faces were blank. Unreadable. I gripped Hannah's hand. The neurosurgeon wasted no time getting down to business.
We were able to find the brain hemorrhage and stop the bleeding.
Relief flooded my body. Cole had had another seizure, and they'd rushed him into surgery afterward when the MRI had shown a bleed the CT had missed. His neurosurgeon went on, his hands in continual motion as he spoke.
His brainstem reflexes are working, his pupils are reacting to light, and he reacts appropriately to external stimuli. I expect him to experience a full recovery.
Hannah's hand shook in mine. Two other nurses wheeled him in from the recovery room. Hannah and I shuffled to his side, afraid to look. His eyes were closed. His head was wrapped in bandages. He was pincushioned with needles. Hannah stuck her finger through one of the holes and stroked his leg. He opened his eyes.
I'm so sorry,
she whispered. The pain in her voice was so thick it was tangible. I wrapped my arms around her shoulders and brought her close to me. Her body was stiff, unmoving, like a pile of bones next to mine.
We'll watch him overnight to make sure everything continues to be okay and probably for the next 24 hours. But if he continues to do well, we can start talking about discharge plans.
His pediatrician spoke up.
We'll watch him closely for the next few months, but it was only a cranial bruise, so we shouldn't expect to see any long-term damage. I squeezed Hannah.
Did you hear that? He's gonna be okay.
Case number 5243. Interview, Piper Goldstein.
It says here that your colleagues expressed concern that you were too close to this case, that there were important signs you could have missed. What do you think about that? You think there's any truth to their claims? He asked.
Absolutely not. I'm good at what I do because I care about the people I work with. I'd never apologize for it.
But you missed the bruises on Janie's neck, didn't you?
Dread crept into my throat.
He motioned to the tape recorder in front of him and asked the question again.
Yes, I did, but only at first.
Was there anything else you could have missed at first?
I winced.
No. When did you finally notice the bruises on her neck?
He asked, emphasizing the word finally for effect.
By law, you have to check on the child in the new home within 24 hours, so I stopped at Allison's house the next day.
Allison had looked like she'd aged overnight.
No amount of makeup could hide the bags underneath her eyes. She'd offered me tea just like Hannah, and I'd said yes to her in the same way.
We'd sat in the breakfast nook in her kitchen.
She had rubbed her temples.
How is Cole?
He's still doing well, I'd said. He took a bottle this morning, and the doctor said that was a really good sign.
That's great. And what about Hannah? What are they doing to help her?
I'm not sure what the plan is.
Have you seen anyone turn into a zombie like this before? Why is she still out of it?
Janie had run into the kitchen screaming and waving a toy truck while one of the twins had chased her from behind. The boys looked so much alike that I couldn't tell them apart.
Allison had raised her voice.
Stop running in the house!
They'd ignored her, and their footsteps had thundered through the kitchen and into the family room.
Greg!
Allison had called out.
Greg!
What?
A male voice had responded from somewhere in the house. Can you please take them outside? They need to run off their energy, and they're giving me a headache.
On it, he'd said. I'd heard footsteps on the wooden floor in the next room.
Allison had sighed. I don't know what I'd do without him these past few days. I'm so glad he's home.
I bet.
I'd shifted into the reason for my visit. I hadn't wanted to, but I'd been pressed for time. There have been some changes in the kid's case, though, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I'd paused, giving her a minute to settle back into the conversation. The Department of Children's Services works as a team, and different social workers have different roles. There are social workers that work within the hospital setting, and workers like me who work outside the hospital setting. It gets confusing because I often visit families in the hospital, but only if I'm already working with them or if one of the hospital social workers files a report. Does that make sense? She had nodded. A hospital social worker was assigned to Cole's case. Her name is Holly, and she filed a child in need of protective services order given the nature of his injuries.
Allison had looked as confused as I'd expected.
Any children that are in the home have to be removed until the preliminary investigation is complete. Basically, it's an emergency order designed to keep the kids safe until they rule out child abuse.
She'd held up her hand to stop me. Wait, they think Cole was abused?
Not necessarily, but they have to make sure because of the factors surrounding his injuries. Unfortunately, his injuries and the circumstances surrounding them are what we typically see in kids who've been abused. The kind of head injury, his age, the mother being alone with the child, no identified accident, and previous emergency room visits due to injury with other children in the home.
That's absurd! Hannah would never hurt anyone, let alone a child. Are you kidding me?
I agree, but you have to understand where the hospital is coming from. They are liable if they miss child abuse, so they always err on the side of being overcautious. I can't blame them for it. And honestly, if I didn't know Hannah so well, I'd have my suspicions too, and probably do the same thing. Really? Yes. So what happens now?
That's what I was hoping you could help with, I had said. Janie has to be in emergency care until the report is finished. It will probably take about 2 to 3 days for them to determine that it's not a case of child abuse, and then the protective order will be lifted. In cases like this, we like to place the child with a family member, so I wanted to ask if you would act as Janie's guardian during the investigation. She hadn't even paused before responding. Of course, I'll do anything for Hannah. It won't just be Janie. If Cole gets out of the hospital before it's complete, he'll need to stay with you too. Her face had flooded with worry at the mention of Cole's name. That's fine. Thanks so much for doing this. I know Hannah appreciates it too, and she'll thank you once she's feeling more like herself. I had looked around. Can I talk to Janie before I leave? Certainly, I'll get her. Greg had herded all of them into the backyard for a game of tag, and now Allison had walked to the back of the house and called her inside. Janie had stomped into the kitchen. She hadn't looked happy to see me. She never did. Are you having a good time playing with your cousins? I'd ask. She'd nodded, looking annoyed. Can I go play now? I just wanted to talk to you about something before I left. Have you ever had a sleepover before? Her eyes had lit up. I love sleepovers. Good, because you're going to have a sleepover here for a few nights while your parents are in the hospital with Cole. I'd stared at her, making sure she understood. That's when I had noticed the fingertip bruises on her neck. My legs had gone weak. I'd needed to sit down. How could I have missed them? In all my 25 years as a social worker, I'd never missed something so important. Luke's voice broke into my memory. Did you report it that day? I had back-to-back client meetings, so I wasn't able to. It was true, but we both knew it didn't matter. For the record, you didn't report the incident that day?
I did not.
He locked eyes with me. In fact, you didn't even note it in her chart until 3 days later, did you?
51. Christopher Bauer. We were waiting on Cole's discharge papers. The doctors had finally cleared him to go home, but that had been 2 hours ago, and we still hadn't gotten any of the paperwork we needed. I stared at Hannah as she paced the room, treading a path across the linoleum. She was in the same clothes she'd been in since we had gotten here. Her shirt was filthy now. She held Cole against her chest as she walked, babbling underneath her breath. I needed to get them both home. I had understood her being this upset when we hadn't known if he was going to be okay, but she was worse now than she had been before, and the doctor said he was going to be fine. Dan's former nanny, Greta, was coming to our house tomorrow for an interview. I hadn't told Hannah, but I didn't think it would matter all that much because she spent most of her time lost somewhere in her thoughts. There was no way I was leaving her alone with either of the kids, not until she was better. Someone knocked at our door. Everyone always knocked before coming in, but it was more of a formality than anything else. No one ever waited for you to invite them inside. Piper walked in with a man and a woman dressed in civilian clothes. I'd never seen them before. "Hi, Hannah," Piper said. Hannah gave her an almost imperceptible nod. "Hi, Christopher," Piper said. "Hi." We stood there awkwardly. Why wasn't she introducing me to the people with her? Piper cleared her throat. I'd never seen her look so nervous. She kept clearing her throat like there was something stuck there before she finally worked up the nerve to speak. "This is a very difficult conversation for me to have, and I'm not sure how to get started, so I think I'm just going to cut to the chase." She looked at me since it was impossible to make eye contact with Hannah, who still paced the room. "Given that Cole sustained a head injury in the way that he did, the hospital social worker made another report to the Department of Children's Services that they suspected child abuse was going on in your home. This is the second time the hospital has made a report, and by law, we have to investigate it." I understood child protection laws. I'd made similar reports before. We all had. It was always better to be safe than sorry. "During the investigation,
The children have to be removed from the home.
Her voice got softer with each word.
What? Why? Where would they even go?
I looked to Hannah to gauge her reaction, but it didn't look like she was even paying attention. How could she ignore this? I wanted to shake her, get her to snap out of whatever stupor she'd been in. I couldn't go through all this without her.
I spoke with Allison this morning, and she agreed to take the kids until this all blows over. I'm sorry, Christopher, I really am, she said.
The two individuals with her moved forward to stand beside her.
These are my colleagues, Marilyn Fragick and Josh Hoff. They're going to transport Cole to Allison's.
What? We can't even bring him to Allison's? You have to take him there? She nodded. Tears filled her eyes.
I know this is hard, and if there was anything I could have done to prevent it, I would have.
A knot of anxiety balled in my stomach. She placed her hand on my back.
You can follow us there if you want.
She shrugged at my confused expression.
I know. Some of the policies don't make any sense. We have to be the ones to make sure he gets into proper custody.
And they don't trust us to get him there?
Of course they trust you, but they don't know you. It's just policy. You understand that.
I turned to Hannah.
Do you want to follow them there?
She'd moved back against the window, cradling Cole against her chest with both hands. Panic filled her eyes, her body tense.
Hannah?
I took a step toward her.
Hannah?
She shook her head. Her eyes flitted around the room.
I know this is hard, hon, but it's only like 10 minutes that we'd be away from him. It's just for the drive.
She shook her head again. I reached for her.
No!
She screamed and jerked back. I stopped, stunned. Piper came up behind me. She reached her hands out toward Cole.
Hannah, give him to me,
she said gently.
No!
She screamed.
Get away from me! You can't have him! You can't take him! He can't stay there!
Hannah, calm down. They're just taking him to Allison's. It's not like they're taking him to a stranger. She'll take wonderful care of him. I reached for her arm, but she moved too quickly, stepping out of my reach. She grabbed the nightstand and shoved it at us. The empty tray on top flew across the room and slammed into the wall before clattering to the floor.
Get away from me! I'm warning you! Don't come near me! If you come near me, I'll jump out this window!
Her eyes were wild, her body tense, ready to fight. Cole let out a wail.
Shh! Shh! It's okay!
She frantically jiggled him.
See, you're scaring Cole. Just stop now. Give him to me.
I motioned for him.
Hannah, please. Hannah.
She plastered herself against the window. Her nostrils flared in and out. She clawed at the window behind her while staring at each of us, daring us to move.
I'll do it. I swear to God. I'll do it, Christopher. Get away.
A voice from behind me said,
Somebody call psych.
52. Hannah Bauer. I wanted to scream, but it was caught in my throat. There was water between my legs from wetting myself. My eyes snapped open. I tried to move. I couldn't. My hands and legs were restricted, strapped down. I fought against the restraints. It was no use. I couldn't break free. My spine throbbed all the way through my tailbone. I scanned left to right and back again, searching for someone, anyone, to help me. There was nothing but four cement walls surrounding me and fluorescent lights above me. No windows, no door. The smell of hospital assaulted me. My heart pounded, threatening to explode. I was covered in sweat. Panic clawed at my throat. It's just a dream. You're having a nightmare. I willed myself to breathe. None of this is real. Wake up. Just wake yourself up. And then it all came flooding back. Memories shoved their way into my consciousness in random flashes. Cole in the hospital. My screams. Strange faces shining lights in my eyes. I shook my head, trying to clear the cotton from my thoughts. My throat was so dry it hurt to swallow. My muscles screamed. My body ached to move. How long had I been here? Tears moved down my cheeks, unbidden. I cried myself back to sleep. Nothing had changed when I woke up. The fluorescent lights above made my head hurt. I turned to the side. That's when I noticed a small red light in the upper corner I had missed before. Someone was watching me. I started to yell, but stopped myself as quickly as I started. What would they do to me when they came in the room? My body flooded with panic again. Not being able to move was excruciating. The straps cut into my ankles. I was so thirsty. I'd never been this thirsty. My teeth stuck to my lips, and pieces of skin came off when I tried to separate them. A door opened behind me. I froze. The sound of footsteps moved around me. And then she was hovering over me, peering down at me. A woman I'd never seen before, and I'd remember if I had, because she was stunningly beautiful. She had a face you didn't forget, high cheekbones, lashes so long they looked fake, and perfect round lips. She laid a hand on my forehead. How are you feeling? I tried to talk, but my voice was gone. I was so thirsty it had dried out. Would you like to sit up? She asked. I nodded eagerly. She took the restraint off my left arm. I wiggled it around, so glad to be free. Then she took off my right restraint. She grabbed my arms and pulled me into a sitting position on the table. Angry red scratches lined both arms. You did those to yourself, she said, as if she could read my mind. She released the straps around my ankles. Her scrubs were white, so bright they hurt my eyes, and perfectly pressed. There wasn't a fold or a crease. Even her tennis shoes gleamed. She was spotless. I've let Dr. Pike know you're awake and out of your restraints. Once she clears you, we can have someone show you around the unit and to your room. Everyone has their own room here. She spoke like a schoolteacher. Another woman strutted into the room and moved past the nurse to stand beside my bed. I'm Dr. Pike, she said. She had a prominent nose and thin lips. Her short hair was clipped back. How are you feeling? Thirsty, I managed to squawk out. She motioned to the nurse. Can you get her some water, please? The nurse nodded and scurried away. It's frightening to wake up this way, and I apologize for that, but you had to be restrained and sedated for your own safety. Most patients find it very disorienting when they come out of it. Again, my apologies. We wouldn't have done it if it weren't absolutely necessary. I nodded, even though I didn't understand or remember. What had I done? The nurse returned with a styrofoam cup filled with water. I took the water from her and gulped it down. Thank you, I said. You're welcome, Dr. Pike said, taking the cup from me and tossing it into the trash can underneath the sink. Her face exuded a neutral warmth. She grabbed the stool and slid it beside the bed, taking a seat next to me. You got pretty upset earlier today. Why don't you tell me what's been going on with you? I stared at her, willing myself to talk, but I couldn't. There were just images, flashes, pieces. I tried to focus, remember, but my memory had too many holes in it. Pain leaked out of me like a bad smell. She stood. Okay, well, if you don't want to talk, then your nurse, Maureen, will take you to the unit. I'll check in later to see how you're settling in, and we can discuss your medication. She pointed toward the door. Go. The world spun when I stood. Maureen held open the door, and a long, narrow hallway greeted me. The obnoxious fluorescent lighting was gone and replaced with dull, barely visible light casting a murky gray on all the walls. A series of metal doors flanked the sides. Maureen held my arm and helped me forward, my legs still wobbly underneath me from whatever they'd given me. I stumbled through the hallway. The door to my left opened, and a nurse brushed against me. I stepped back instinctively as if I had a contagious disease. We followed the hallway through another series of twists and turns, a sense of impending doom mounting with each step, before arriving at another set of double doors. Instead of using her key card to unlock the door, Maureen pressed a red button next to it. There was a loud buzz, and the doors opened into another hallway. People shuffled around with vacant eyes, some of them talking to themselves. The door clicked shut behind me. The lock engaged. "You have to keep moving. You have to stay in front of the red line," Maureen said as she nudged me gently forward. I hadn't realized I'd stopped. I looked down. A thick red line stretched across the hallway in front of the doors. Maureen nudged me again. I stepped over it. "You can't go past this line without a staff member. If you do, it will sound an alarm. Do you understand?" She spoke slowly, enunciating each syllable like I had difficulty hearing. I nodded. She pointed to the tape again and repeated herself like I still didn't get it. "Patients can't go past this line." I breathed a sigh of relief. I was safe now.
53. Christopher Bauer. The smell of spoiled milk assaulted me when I walked in the front door of our house. Everything was exactly like we'd left it, including Janie's cereal bowl from breakfast in the sink. I rinsed it out, but the place still smelled foul, so I walked through the house searching for other culprits. Our house wasn't big, but it felt huge without my family. I found the sippy cup Janie used each morning for her snack on the coffee table in the living room. The leftover milk was turning into cottage cheese. I didn't bother to clean it, but just threw it in the trash. I filled the dishwasher with the remaining dishes in the sink and added detergent before pressing start. I leaned against the counter, crossing my arms against my chest. What had happened that morning? It was the question that chased itself around and around like a snake trying to catch its tail. I'd spent the last 3 days racking my brain for anything I might have missed, but there wasn't anything unusual. It had been a rough morning, but most of our mornings were difficult. That wasn't anything out of the ordinary, so it never gave me any cause for concern, at least not any more than it did every day when I left for work. I walked aimlessly through the house, searching for clues, as if they were hidden in the walls somewhere. I moved from room to room, picking up things as I went. I couldn't remember the last time our house had been messy, and I missed when Hannah hadn't cared so much about cleaning. Who was I kidding? I missed Hannah, period. But I missed the old Hannah, not this new one who had taken her place. What if I never got her back? I moved into the bedroom and sat on the edge of our bed. How would I fall asleep tonight? It didn't feel right without them here, the kids at Allison's and Hannah at the hospital in Columbus. When the psychiatric response team had arrived at the hospital, I had begged them to take her to Worthington Presbyterian. It was 20 miles away from Clarksville. But she couldn't stay at Northfield Memorial. There was no way her admission to the psychiatric ward would stay a secret, and she'd be mortified that she'd been institutionalized once she felt better. I had to protect her reputation and career. She would have done the same for me. Our bedroom floor was covered with family photos and various albums. They were arranged in neat piles that Hannah had constantly gone through, getting just as worked up as she had the first time. She didn't need them staring her in the face when she came home. I grabbed an empty box from the garage to store them in. I would go through them when things calmed down. Maybe there was a chance I could salvage a few, but for now, I needed to get rid of them. They were the last thing she needed to see when she got home.
I started sorting through the mess. There were so many of them, all of them damaged, defaced in some awful way. They were too sad to look at. I began to toss them into the box, quickly moving through the piles. The fancy baby book Allison had given us at our baby shower was buried underneath the last pile. I hadn't realized Hannah had been filling it out. The cover was beautiful, with the telltale title, Your First Year, and a picture of Cole in the hospital, in a see-through slipcover on the front. I thumbed through the first couple of pages, the dates starting the day we had gotten home from the hospital. It was the usual stuff, weight, height, length, coupled with his little footprint from the hospital and the ID bracelet he had worn. She'd written everything in swirly handwriting, and even that looked happy. She'd added notes and comments next to all the factual information. Your hands were the biggest part. You didn't like the hearing test. The nurse named Judy made you cry. The next page was a letter she'd written to Cole. It was one that only a new mother could write after she'd just fallen hopelessly in love with the life she had created. But it wasn't long before things turned. Her handwriting changed. The big spiral curls were gone, replaced with messy, hurried scrawls. Each page had a small spot to journal, and the space was too small for all her words, so she'd scribbled between and around the designs or fact sheets on the page. She'd made herself disjointed lists, writing the same things over and over again. Pregnancy weight is all gone. Some women would be happy about this. Me? It's just more proof that I'm wasting away. Today Christopher told me I need to be more loving toward Janie. I can't. I just can't anymore. I don't have it in me. I'm depleted. So empty. I am in the background of my head. How did I get here? The next few entries were more the same. I'm a prisoner in my own home. I feel her watching me everywhere I go. She's just waiting. She wants to hurt him. I know she does. I can see it in her eyes, those black eyes. Today when he was crying, she screamed at me to take him back. I wanted to slap her, tell her she's the one who needs to go back. I never used to cry. Now, it's all I do. It washes over me like an unwanted wave, flattening me. I don't try to stop the tears anymore. There's no point. I just let them come. Something is eating me up inside, telling me I'm not good enough. I fake smiles for him. Can he tell? She told me she hated me today. It's not the first time. It used to hurt. Not anymore. At first, her entries were cohesive and put together paragraphs describing her struggles, but it wasn't long before they derailed. She'd been obsessed with creating a detailed calendar of the things Janie had done, but she'd never quite got it right because she'd constantly been crossing them out and starting over. And then her writing took a turn I had never expected. I feel the ice-cold breath of her demon. It blows on my neck while I'm feeding Cole. I can see the demon in her eyes when I look at her, the twisted grin on its face. It licks its fangs like it wants to hurt Cole. I heard her talking to it again today, in a different language. Latin? She thinks he's funny. She says he's the one who told her to put her poop on the walls. When the devil takes over, there's nothing you can do. I stopped there, stunned. Hannah wasn't a religious person, never had been. Her parents hadn't brought her to church, not even on the holidays. His talons, those ugly claws, they reached out from inside her and tried to grab Cole. They want him too. They aren't going to be satisfied until he joins them. I screamed at her to stay away from him, and she just laughed. I have to do something. I can't let them have him. I won't. I'm his mother. I have to protect him, no matter what. No matter what it takes, that's what you do. I can do it. I'll do it if I have to. She wrote down websites about children who were demon-possessed. Each of the websites was circled multiple times. Keep track. Must keep track of her. Called again. Answers. None. Then she stopped dating the pages. Today I met the angels. I'm so glad they're here. I'm not going to be able to do this without them. Their voices are so kind and soft, not like the demon. Cole hears them too. He giggles when they whisper in his ear. I'm glad he likes them. Her last entry was four words. Today is the day.
Hannah always barged into Allison's house without knocking, but it felt weird without her, so I knocked instead. Allison opened the door just as Janie came barreling down the hallway.
Daddy!
I swept her up in one swift movement. I kissed her and squeezed her tightly, wishing I could grab her and take her to the park for the day instead of what we were about to do, but there was no way around it.
I missed you, I said, kissing her again and straightening out her ponytail and back.
Come in,
Allison said just as formally as I felt. Dr. Chandler and Piper stood in the entryway with her. They both held coffee cups. I was early, which meant they'd been even earlier. Had they met without me beforehand? Why would they do that? What weren't they telling me? All of this was making me paranoid. I needed to calm down. The Department of Children's Services needed Janie's statement, and Piper had worked her magic so that Dr. Chandler could do the forensic interview. She was the perfect choice, since she'd served as an expert witness in numerous child abuse cases, and Janie already trusted her. She was more forthcoming with her than with anyone else. Greg had taken Dylan and Caleb to the batting cages so they would be out of the way for the interview. I appreciated his thoughtfulness. Allison ushered us into the dining room. Their taste in decor was completely different than Hannah's and mine. We used to joke about it all the time. We favored homey craftsman looks, while Allison's house was sleek and contemporary. The windows were draped in matching white fabric, and professional family photographs lined the other wall. The first time we'd visited, I'd been afraid to sit on the dining room chairs in case I wrinkled the white fabric or spilled on the floor. Dr. Chandler scanned the room.
Do you think we might have this discussion with Janie in another room? I want her to be as comfortable as possible. Maybe a playroom or family room?
Sure, Allison said.
Janie held my hand as we followed Allison into the basement. Unlike the rest of the house, the family room was a wide-open space, perfect for children. The concrete floors were covered in sidewalk chalk, and the place was big enough for them to race their scooters. Toys lined the floor, and beanbag chairs were scattered everywhere. An L-shaped sectional was pushed against the far wall.
"This is the kid zone. I let them do whatever they want down here," Allison said. "This is perfect. I love it,"
Dr. Chandler said. She took a seat on the couch, and we all followed suit, even Janie, who seemed to have sensed there was something different and important about the day.
"I'm so glad to see you, Janie. We have some important things to talk about."
Janie leaned forward, listening intently to what she was about to say.
"Remember how we've talked about the difference between a truth and a lie?"
Janie nodded.
"It's really important that you answer my questions with the truth and no lies, okay?"
Janie nodded again. Dr. Chandler looked at Piper to see if she had anything to add. Piper motioned for her to continue.
"I wasn't there the day that Cole got hurt, and I don't know what happened,"
Dr. Chandler said.
"Do you think you could help me understand what happened?"
Janie's eyes lit up. She was always eager to help.
"Sure."
Dr. Chandler smiled at her.
"Why don't you start by telling me where you were when Cole got hurt?" "I was in the bathroom."
"What were you doing in the bathroom?"
"Taking a bath."
Dr. Chandler kept her face expressionless.
"Do you usually take baths during the day?"
Janie shook her head.
"It was a special bath." "A special bath? What's that?" "A bath with my clothes on, silly,"
she giggled. Allison looked at me, her face stricken. Tension radiated off her.
"Of course, a special bath. Now I understand. Do you take special baths a lot?"
"Sometimes,"
Janie nodded.
"Mommy said she wanted to play a game with me."
"She did?"
Dr. Chandler feigned excitement.
"Was it a fun one?"
Janie narrowed her eyes to slits and crossed her arms.
"No, Mommy was mean. The mean Mommy came out to play."
All the color drained from Allison's face. Dr. Chandler didn't miss a beat.
"Oh, you have a mean mommy? What's mean mommy like?"
Janie wrinkled up her face.
"She does bad things."
Dr. Chandler didn't press.
"What did mean mommy do during the special bath?"
Dr. Chandler moved from her spot on the couch and knelt in front of Janie. She looked straight into Janie's eyes.
"Sometimes it's hard to find the words to use when we want to talk about something that's happened to us. Remember how we played with my dolls?" Janie gave a barely perceptible nod. Would you like to use the dolls and show me what happened?
Janie's eyes lit up at the idea. Dr. Chandler reached into her bag and pulled out a container. She took off the lid and handed it to Janie. She pulled out two dolls, a grown woman and a young girl. Dr. Chandler watched as Janie held on to them for a few seconds. We all sat and waited for her to do something. Allison was on the edge of her seat, looking like she wanted to stop her. Suddenly, Janie's screams pierced the air.
You can't have him! I won't let you take him!
She smacked the little girl doll with the other doll. Allison jumped up and ran upstairs. Dr. Chandler looked at me to see how I was holding up and nodded for her to continue. I was glued to my seat like I was witnessing a horrible car accident. She placed her hand softly on Janie's back. Her voice was even as she spoke to her.
Janie, I like how you are using your words to tell us what happened. What's the mean mommy doll doing?
She's fighting with the girl.
Her lower lip trembled.
Why is she fighting with the girl?
Mommy says the girl is a bad girl. She has to go away.
Tears filled her eyes and threatened to spill down her cheeks.
The girl doesn't want to go away. She's not bad.
Dr. Chandler pulled her close and cuddled her against her chest. She rocked her slowly and gently.
The girl is not bad. She doesn't have to go away. She's a good girl.
Janie's shoulders shook with sobs. I reached out and stroked her back, even though Dr. Chandler had instructed me to not intervene during the interview.
Is that enough?
I asked. Dr. Chandler looked at me, annoyance written all over her face, and shook her head. I quickly scooted back on the couch and folded my hands on my lap before she banished me from the room. Janie's body trembled, and I couldn't help but remember all the times Dr. Chandler had talked about trauma being stored in the body. It made sense in a way that it never had before, as I watched Janie twitch and fight as she struggled with her secret.
Mommy tried to push me down in the water,
she said between sobs in the baby voice she only used when she was upset.
I said, no, 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 Mommy.
She flung her body back and forth in the same way I was sure she'd done that day.
Mommy didn't care. She just pushed me down and pushed me down. Then Mommy fell and gave Cole a boo-boo on his head.
My stomach rolled. Silence filled the room with the enormity of her words.
What happened next?
Dr. Chandler's gaze never wavered from Janie.
I cried.
She was crying again now, my heart squeezed within my chest. I sat on my hands to keep from reaching out and pulling her close. Thankfully, Dr. Chandler rested a comforting hand on her back.
That must have been very scary,
she said. Janie's lower lip trembled.
I wanted my daddy.
Janie, I...
Dr. Chandler put her hand up to stop me.
Christopher, why don't you go get Janie some water while I finish up the interview?
You're doing great, Janie, I said. I reached over and tousled the top of her head. I'll be back in just a minute. You be a good girl and finish talking to Dr. Chandler, okay? She nodded. I hurried up the stairs and almost ran into Allison in the kitchen. She'd been crying.
You couldn't take it either?
She asked. More like I couldn't stay out of it. I just kept trying to jump in and save her. I understand that they need her statement, but it was excruciating to watch Janie have to go through it again.
I don't know how Dr. Chandler does her job. I never could. That was too much.
Allison shuddered.
There's no way Hannah hurt Cole or Janie on purpose. No way. She just wouldn't.
She jutted her chin forward.
She brought every sick animal home with her when we were kids, and not just cute animals like the stray cats in the neighborhood.
She smiled at a memory.
She brought home a litter of baby rats once. Rats! Can you imagine? Our mom was totally freaked out and wanted her to bring them back to where she found them. But Hannah refused. She kept them hidden in a shoebox in her room and bottle-fed them. That's the kind of person she is. I just don't understand.
Her eyes welled with tears again.
Come here, I said.
She fell into my arms, sobbing. I held her while she cried and gave her a moment to gather herself when she was finished. She splashed water on her face from the kitchen sink and patted herself dry with a paper towel.
Do I have to go back down there?
She asked.
I'm not sure I can handle any more.
I motioned toward her breakfast nook, her favorite spot in the house. Why don't you make yourself a cup of tea and take a seat until they're finished? She looked relieved.
You want a cup?
I'd love a cup. Just give me a second. I didn't wait for her response. I grabbed the baby journal from my car and headed back inside. Part of me had considered keeping it. I'd been trying to convince myself that just because Hannah had written those things down didn't mean she'd acted on them or done anything wrong. But after what I'd seen and heard, the only explanation that made sense was the one contained within its pages. I hurried back inside and downstairs. Dr. Chandler was huddled on the floor with Janie, busy playing with dolls. Nobody was speaking. Piper sat in the same spot on the sofa where she'd been when I'd left her. I handed the journal to her.
I found this in Hannah's things. You need to read it.
54. Hannah Bauer. Do you have any kids? I asked the chief psychologist, Dr. Spence, as I hugged my knees to my chest and shifted in my seat. Our positions never changed during our sessions, even if we met more than one time in a day. Do you think it's important that I have kids? She sat in her straight-backed chair, legs always crossed at the ankles, notebook balanced on her lap, ready. She was always straight-faced. I'd never seen her smile. Was she that way with everyone, or just me? You don't know what it's like to be a parent unless you have kids, I mumbled underneath my breath. Our sessions were painful, but I liked being in her office because it had a window. Very few rooms on the unit had windows. I didn't care that most of my view was blocked by the building across the sidewalk because I could see the sky, and there was hope as long as I could see the sky. When I first got here, all I did was stare out the window at the sky. She used to let me do that. Not anymore. Anyway, you were telling me about Cole's crying. Do you want to continue with where you were at? She had wide-set champagne-colored eyes and a flat face, perfect for masking her emotional responses. I just wanted him to go to sleep. For so long, that's all I wanted. It had seemed like his crying and sleeplessness would never end. The days had been long, the nights even longer. And then he did. He finally slept. She smiled. That must have been wonderful. It was awful. She looked surprised. Why was that? I couldn't sleep. My voice cracked, barely audible. It was brutal. All I wanted was rest. But I couldn't sleep. I just couldn't. I had tossed and turned all night long. Even if I'd managed to nod off, it had been only a matter of minutes before I jolted awake. I could never sleep for more than an hour at a time. It had been torturous to be bone-tired but unable to sleep. Is that when the images began? She asked. She knew about the images? When had I told her that? My memory was filled with too many blank spaces. I nodded. Cole was only a week old the first time. He might have been 2 weeks old. It's hard to remember. Things are still pretty cloudy. My mind was coming back in the same way it had left, slowly and in pieces. It had been one of my hard days. That part I remembered clearly. I hadn't slept at all, and Cole had been crying on and off for hours. Janie had been in the living room screaming. There had been a pair of scissors on the dresser next to the changing table. Suddenly, I'd been acutely aware of their presence. I had never experienced anything like it. A strange voice had interrupted my thoughts and whispered, "Grab the scissors." And it was quickly followed by the image of me stabbing the scissors into Cole's chest. It had felt like the scissors were controlling my thoughts. I had chanted, Don't look at the scissors, as I stepped over to the dresser, holding the scissors in front of me at arm's length like they'd burn me if they got too close. I had slowly walked into the kitchen and put the scissors away. I hadn't felt safe until they were tucked in the drawer. Was that the last time anything like that happened to you? Dr. Spence asked. No. I saw Cole hitting his head on the doorframe whenever I walked through one with him. I was terrified that I wouldn't give myself enough space to make it through and would bash his head on the side of the frame. There were other times I saw his head exploding while Christopher held him up in the air in a strange attempt to calm him. I'd watch as Cole's spine snapped and folded backward. Eventually, I couldn't take it, and I'd yell at Christopher to stop. The images had played themselves out like unwanted movie clips. The harder I had tried to stop them, the more they had come. Did you tell anyone what you were experiencing? Christopher? Allison? No. How could I have told anyone what I was seeing? Having images of stabbing your baby wasn't consistent with being in love with your baby, and I loved Cole with all my heart. I'd been terrified of something happening to him, utterly terrified. I'd mentally walked through every possible danger, each one a graphic novel in my head. I hadn't trusted anyone to keep him safe, not even Christopher. Have you thought any more about your diagnosis? I shook my head. The psychiatric team said I'd had a psychotic break from postpartum depression. They told me there was nothing I could have done to stop or prevent it, and assured me it resulted from a combination of biological factors beyond my control, my sleep deprivation, dramatic hormone shift, and genetic predisposition. But I knew I was still responsible for what I'd done. It didn't matter how much therapy they gave me or what kind of drugs they pumped into me. I had tried to drown Janie. My psychiatrist told me everything I felt or saw was delusional, but he was wrong. Some of it was right. It was real. I took a deep breath before going on. She needed to know the truth. Janie was the only person who scared me more than my thoughts. I didn't want her anywhere near Cole. Christopher thought I was just irritated and frustrated with her because I was so tired. But Janie would have hurt Cole if she ever got the chance. That part was never delusional, and I don't care how much medication you put me on. I'm not going to change my mind. She interrupted me. But that's the problem, Hannah. You can't trust your mind anymore.
Case number 5243. Interview, Piper Goldstein. Luke slid the album across the table. I didn't have to look at the cover to know what it was. I'd been through it many times. Is this the journal submitted into evidence? It is. And what did you think when you read it? How could he understand that nothing I had read fit with the woman I knew? All he saw was the woman from the last few months, and that person was a stranger. She wasn't Hannah. But this time I didn't have to try and explain myself. I can't discuss records in an open child protection case, I recited exactly as I'd been told by my supervisor. He had no choice but to switch tactics. What did you do with the journal? I handed it over to the authorities investigating the Bowers case. Did you tell Allison about any of the things you read in the journal? No. Why was that? Didn't she have a right to know? I assumed Hannah had told her because the two of them were so close. They weren't just sisters. They were best friends. And best friends tell each other everything, even stuff that's horrible. So I just figured she knew everything. But she didn't know everything, did she? I shook my head. No, she didn't. Would it have made a difference?
55. Christopher Bauer. In all my years as a doctor, I had never been on a locked psychiatric ward before, and I was horrified by the place. It must have been designed to be as grim as possible, because there was nothing warm about it. The rooms were in desperate need of a paint job. Their whitewashed walls had become a grimy yellow. There weren't any windows, nothing that spoke of life. Just stale, recycled air and a complete sense of isolation. How was anyone supposed to feel better in a place thick with depression? There were all these plainclothes orderlies who were paid to watch the patients like glorified babysitters. One of them led Hannah into the room, and she shuffled in, her head hanging low and her hair haphazardly falling forward. It was matted and had a big ball in the back. I couldn't believe they just let her walk around like that. Why didn't someone brush her hair? Her pajama pants dragged on the floor. She wasn't allowed to be alone, so the orderly guided her into a seat, then grabbed one of the chairs for himself and plopped down in the doorway, leaving the door open so he could listen. I barely recognized her when she looked up. Her eyes were clouded and hazy with all the drugs they were pumping into her. She stared at me like she wasn't seeing me. I wasn't sure she was. Hi. I didn't know what else to say. She put her hands on the table, nervously wringing them together, and looked down. How are you doing? Still no response. The silence was so thick you could reach out and touch it. Do you want me to leave? I asked. She mumbled something, but I couldn't understand. Excuse me? Can you say that again? I didn't hear you. She refused to answer. We sat in silence. I could hear the orderly breathing in the doorway. Hannah played with her hands. I stayed for another few minutes, but it wasn't long before I couldn't take it anymore. I think I'm going to go, I announced. She didn't flinch. I stood up and left without saying goodbye. She'd brushed her hair, so she didn't look quite so ragged at our next visit. She shuffled into the room in the same manner she had before. It was a different orderly in the doorway this time. Hi, I tried again. Hi. Her voice was raspy and hoarse. We sat in the same spots as before. She put her hand in her mouth and anxiously chewed on her fingernails. She'd never chewed her fingernails before.
I didn't think you'd come.
Her voice stopped. I bit back tears.
I couldn't leave you here alone.
Her eyes were vacant. She wore a 1,000-yard stare.
You look better today, I said.
I talked to her doctor every day, and she kept me updated on Hannah's progress. They'd recently added a new medication to her cocktail of antipsychotics.
You were here before?
She asked. I nodded.
Yes. You were pretty out of it. I hate the drugs. You know how I feel about drugs.
Her voice was flat, devoid of emotion. I cleared my throat, nervous to ask.
Do they help?
She shrugged. Are you eating? I didn't know what to talk about.
Not really. The medication makes me nauseous.
Is there anything that sounds good?
Maybe I could bring you something. You'd bring me food?
Her eyes filled with tears. I reached across the table and pulled her hand out of her mouth. I put it in mine. Her hands were dry, scaly. I rubbed my finger gently on top of hers.
Yes.
It was hard to speak around the lump in my throat. She jerked her hand away.
Don't touch me.
I dropped her hand.
I'm sorry. I just... Please go. Just go.
Tears streamed down her cheeks.
Don't come back.
I'm not going to go, Hannah. I'm not just going to leave you here. I love you. That doesn't change because you're sick. Her voice trembled as she spoke.
I am more than sick. I try to kill a child. Don't try to make this better for me.
We've all done some horrible things during this. I lowered my voice to a whisper so the orderly sitting in the doorway couldn't hear. I hit you, Hannah.
56. Hannah Bauer.